Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 8th of March. Joining us in just a moment, Alicia Shepherd. She's the Ombudsman for National Public Radio. It's a position that was started in the year 2000. In fact, NPR was the first U.S. broadcast news organization to create an ombudsman position. She became the ombudsman in 2007. Before that, she spent 4 years teaching journalism and contributing to the New York Times, Washingtonian Magazine, the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, the Newark Star-Ledger, and the Washington Post. While she was working on a book, and that book, Woodward and Bernstein, Life in the Shadow of Watergate, chronicles the lives of the two journalists during and after their landmark investigation. She is co-author of Running Toward Danger, Stories Behind the Breaking News of 9/11, and How Journalists Covered the Tragedy and the Public Roles that They Played. She is here to talk about the position of ombudsman, which is responsible for bringing transparency to journalism decision-making processes. She responds to questions, to comments from listeners. She writes a blog, appears on National Public Radio programs to talk about listener concerns, and also provides guidance on journalism practices to NPR member stations. She sees her job as explaining NPR to listeners to National Public Radio. We'll be welcoming, I hope, many phone calls for her because that's her job, talking about NPR. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Or you can send an email, too, and that is talk@wpr.org. Let's check and see if she's here. Alicia? Hi, Alicia. We'll have to get her on a regular phone line. We also want to let you know that you can respond to us all the time as well. We have a Facebook page, which I should tell you more about because people are starting to respond to other listeners, and that's good to keep the conversation thriving. Our Facebook page is just very simple. Go to the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook and then chat. We always keep you informed on Facebook of who our guests are going to be the next day. We've been pretty good about putting that online for you, and then people are responding to the programs that they hear as well. So that's something that we've been doing for a few months now, and it's fairly successful. You can always send comments to via email to Rhonda and to me, and our email addresses are dunnk@wpr, and Rhonda's is Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, at WPR.org. We were trying to get Alicia on a special line, which doesn't appear to be working, so we'll get her on a regular phone line here momentarily and start taking phone calls. We have a lot to talk about. The mission, of course, of National Public Radio, why they were the first to have an ombudsman program, exactly what that means in terms of how Alicia views her job. We will be talking about the relationship, the structure between National Public Radio and local stations, and we have her on a phone line now. Alicia, hello.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
Sorry.
Hi. That's all right. I just had to talk for a little bit longer. Thanks very much for being with us. Why don't we start with why NPR decided to start an ombudsman program? I understand the first in America back in 2000.
Well, not the first in America, but the first for electronic media. NPR started it in 2000, I think because, well, I know why they did, which was to establish credibility, more credibility with the listeners. By having an ombudsman, it really says, you know, we're confident about our journalism and we are willing to be upfront and in public about mistakes that we make. And I have a tremendous amount of freedom. It's an odd job in the sense that I work at NPR, I'm paid by NPR, and yet I am independent of NPR in that I write a weekly column. No one from NPR sees that beforehand. The first time they would see it when it's up on the blog, which is npr.org/ombudsman. And I think what it does is just say, this is how NPR works, and NPR is confident enough to share how it works with listeners. And my feeling is, Kathleen, that the more people know about what happens behind the microphone, the more confident they will be about the kind of journalism they hear.
Oh, absolutely. Is it mistakes that you're usually addressing, or do people call with their the lovely things that they enjoy about NPR?
Well, I always like to say, do you ever call your cable company and say, you are doing such a great job?
I've never done that.
No. So largely it is complaints about things that are not covered, things that people think are overcovered. Mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes they do point out mistakes. There's also a tremendous sense of bias, that people feel that NPR is biased one way or another. What always strikes me is that more often than not, the complaint is that NPR is too far to the right. And I think the perception out there is that NPR is to the left, but overall, I think people feel that since NPR in the last decade has become more mainstream, that people feel that they want them to be more liberal, more progressive, more like Democracy Now.
Mm-hmm. I think I've noticed, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, that it seems to have become the station of record for people who are in Washington. I hear just as many conservative people who are interviewed, particularly on Morning Edition, which I hear more often, and All Things Considered, as I do those who would be considered progressive. And that must mean that they're feeling that NPR is doing a pretty balanced job of covering issues.
Well, Kathleen, I think, you have listeners, and you know that listeners tend to respond based on what their personal beliefs are. And so, I mean, that is one thing I've really learned from this job. It's not that somebody is right or wrong. It's that they hear things somewhat selectively.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are conservative, they tend to feel that, NPR is a little too liberal, or that the person they're using shouldn't be on, and vice versa. And then I think it's fascinating because, there's one thing that I hear a lot about, and that is the use of the word Mr. Obama. And the complaint is that, well, first let me explain that what NPR does is that if they're doing a news piece about President Obama, they would describe whatever he was doing, and then on the second reference, they would say Mr. Obama. And I bring it up because I get complaints from people who say, I'm a supporter of President Obama's. It's very disrespectful to call him Mr. You never did that with President Bush. And in fact, I put together a piece that shows that NPR has been very consistent all the way back to the 70s of using that with, the two President Bushes, with President Clinton, President Carter. It just sort of jumps out at people if they are if they're President Obama's fans.
Do you have handbooks of correct usage, not only for titles of people, but going beyond that?
Well, I don't know that NPR has a style book, and I should if they did. So what they use is the Associated Press style book, but there's certain things that are NPR style that have just been adopted over the years.
Mm-hmm. And what might those be in addition to calling somebody Mr. after?
Well, for instance, on health care, the word came down to not call it health care reform, but refer to it as health care overhaul, with the thinking being that reform meant that there was something wrong with it, and that overhaul, it was just they were taking another look at it. And, that is something that seems very small, but it's something that they decided to be across the board. The problem with that kind of communication, of course, is it's done through emails, and some people get it and some people don't. And, they'll say the pronunciation of Chile or Chile, and not, as many people call it, the country that just had that horrendous earthquake, Chile. Consistency is very important, and, a style book probably would help.
Mm-hmm. So is it Chile or Chile?
It's Chile.
Chile, that's kind of between it too, isn't it? I would think. I think one of the things, and I know this has been your mission and you receive money to do this as well, is the international coverage that
yeah.
NPR has, which is, I think, just can't be surpassed. It is so well done. And it's also an indication that there aren't many news outlets that are doing that kind of coverage
right.
anymore.
Yeah, it's quite sad in terms of, the number of newspapers that have pulled back foreign bureaus, and NPR has been committed. They have 18 foreign bureaus around the world, and they have 18 domestic bureaus as well. But the foreign news is something that they have not cut back on at all, and they've been through pretty serious budget problems, you know, within the last year and a half. And so I think it's definitely to their credit, you know, that they have people in Baghdad. They've had someone in Kabul for 4 years. There are very few news organizations that have anyone in Afghanistan. They just recently put someone in Pakistan because they see that's where the story is.
Mm-hmm. So how have the recent budget problems last year and a half affected the operation?
You know, what the management will say is that it hasn't. But, you know, there was a lot of upheaval in the sense that there were furloughs and paid holidays were taken away and schedules were changed. And I think the listeners probably noted anything different? No. But there was one story that I actually wrote about this summer, and it was a series that they did, three parts on natural gas. And the series was criticized for seeming to be very pro-industry. And there were some schedule changes. There was someone who left. And what wasn't really in the series that definitely needed to be there was what are the downsides of natural gas?
Mm-hmm.
And in reporting that, you know, my reporting what happened and why did this happen and why wasn't this included, I felt that that may have been a casualty of the furloughs.
Mm-hmm. What about listeners? Are we getting more and more listeners to public radio? Do you have numbers on that?
The listenership seems to be growing. I think it'll be interesting to see what the, you know, the fall figures are, because some of the increase in listenership certainly came from the presidential election.
Yes.
And then the economic crises. And but in general, I think that the listenership to public radio overall is rising. You know, it's not my job to be a shill for NPR or to, you know, promote it. You'd better have the CEO, Vivian Schiller, on. But, you know, overall, it seems to me that what the strategy here is that there's a big market of people who are hungry for information, for credible, solid, factual, contextual information that they might not be getting anymore in their local paper because of budget cuts or even in national papers.
Right. It really is a treasure. There's no doubt about that. It needs to be preserved. Do you ever get tired of people bellyaching all the time?
You know, sometimes I want to say, hey, you can turn it off.
I know I feel that way sometimes, too.
You know, it's not mandatory that you listen. But I will say, on the other hand, I come from a newspaper background. You mentioned I teach media ethics at Georgetown University now. I've written books. And so I'm fairly new to public radio, and I am just blown away by the sense of ownership and commitment that listeners have, you know. And it's partially because they do send in money. But they feel this sense of responsibility in a way that I just never have felt before in working at a newspaper. You know, they want NPR to be better. And they're willing to help. I mean, it's remarkable how many people will offer, you know, people that NPR should be talking to, stories that NPR should be doing. It's great. I mean, I talk to people every day. By the way, I want to say that if you want to call my office, it's 202-513-3245.
Wow, you gave us your phone number. Thank you. That was darn nice. That doesn't happen very often.
Well, I mean, that's a public line now that rings into the ombudsman's office. I have an assistant who talks to listeners as well as I do.
Great.
And, you know, it's sometimes listeners are great tipsters for me in terms of things that I should look into.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you here, Alicia, and we'll take them in just one moment. A couple lines are open, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our guest is the NPR Ombudsman, Alicia Shepherd. She's had the job for a couple of years now, since 2007, and in 2000, NPR, the first broadcast news organization to create an ombudsman position. She spent a number of years teaching journalism. She's written for all kinds of newspapers, the New York Times, Washingtonian, Chicago Tribune, LA Times, Newark Star Ledger, and the list goes on. She is the author of Woodward and Bernstein, Life in the Shadow of Watergate, and also co-author of Running Toward Danger, Stories Behind the Breaking News of 9/11, about how journalists covered 9/11 and the public roles that they played. So we got a ton of phone calls. We'll take them in just one moment. Also, you can use our email if you'd like. Our address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now for Alicia, starting with Brad. Hi, Brad.
Hi there.
Hi.
I wanted to mention that it seems to me in the last 10 years or so that increasingly Fox News and talk radio seem to be setting the stories that are covered by NPR and the mainstream media, if you will. And an issue that I have is I think that even NPR, I think they give too much credence to those bogus stories that are brought up on Fox News and Rush Limbaugh.
And what would those be? Give us an idea of those stories, Brad.
Well, a story would be, let's say, the Tea Party movement or death panels or, you know, a lot of the bogus arguments they've raised on the health care debate about what care is like in Canada for Canadians, which just isn't true. And then, like, you watch CNN or even NPR, and they'll look at those talking points, and they'll give them too much credence, and they'll take them seriously, and they'll present the right-wing position as being very valid and being up for discussion, whereas other news outlets, like the BBC, for example, they wouldn't even take those talking points seriously because they would dismiss them out of hand as completely ridiculous.
Okay. Alicia?
Well, let's talk about the death panels. I don't have the information right in front of me, but I could bet that what NPR did was try to dispel the fact that there was no language like that in the particular bill. And in terms of covering the Tea Party, my feeling is it is a legitimate group, and it is, getting some traction out there, and that, NPR would be remiss in not covering it. Now, what you want is them to challenge every premise that the Tea Party makes, and I would agree with that, and I would hope that would be the case. But I don't feel that, NPR gets its marching orders from Fox News. I think that if anything, NPR is fairly mainstream and is covering what other people are covering as well.
So you don't think that Fox and those other outlets, conservative outlets, set an agenda for what is going to be talked about?
Not totally, but certainly if, it rises to the level of becoming something that people are talking about, then NPR becomes obligated to talk about it. In fact, news is what people are talking about and what people don't know, but it's certainly their job to dispel things that are incorrect. And I think that Julie Rothner in particular has done a pretty good job on health care. My original complaint was that they really sort of bought into the political thinking that there was no political will for the public option, so why bother to cover it? And, that kind of becomes circular. I felt that they should be covering it, and they should, if they cover it, then maybe there would be political will, and not that I'm advocating that there would be, but, if you ignore something, then, nothing happens.
Right. Thanks, Brad, for the call. Michael is next from Oregon, Wisconsin. Hi, Michael.
Wow. Right. Good morning.
Hi.
NPR has to be doing something right. When the people on the right complain that you're a bunch of liberals, when the people on the left complain that you're in some corporation's back pocket, it's okay.
You're okay, Alicia.
Well, I'm not okay, but I tend to agree with that. I mean, I'm always surprised that people feel that NPR is, in the administration's pocket.
Mm. Yeah, I was raised in England. I've been in this country many years, raised on the BBC, and I still, we get the BBC news on television, which I rely on that, as well as NPR. The thing of it is, I'm getting the BBC for free. If you live in England, you pay for it.
Right.
You pay a license fee, and then one of the nice things about NPR, as you pointed out, is voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to listen, you don't have to pay for it, but my Lord, people do pay for it.
Well, let me just jump in here and say that there's something like 30 million public radio listeners, and it always surprises and disappoints me that only 10% donate. Only 10%.
Isn't that terrible?
Ooh. I think it is. I mean,
can I give you a tiny gripe? You started off a program with usage, and I was listening to the earthquake coverage from Haiti.
Uh-huh.
A couple of your correspondents talked about people who were horizontal on the ground as laying on the ground. Not true. They're lying on the ground.
Right.
Thanks for the grammar police once in a while, would you?
Yeah, I think maybe in addition to an ombudsman, they might need a grammar police. It's remarkable how closely, again, that listeners listen, and they let you know when something is grammatically incorrect. But you brought up something else about Haiti that bothered me, was the use of the word looting. And I just feel that you need to sort of explain what is happening there, and that people may be taking things out of stores for their survival. And, okay, yeah, if one or two people are going to capitalize on a bad situation, but to me the word looting just has such a negative context that I remember that David Shaper who was down there, one of the NPR reporters, and I felt like I sent him an email because he explained what was happening and sort of that it was multi-layered, that, you know, some people were looting, some people were taking stuff for mere survival.
Same kind of words were used in New Orleans.
And in Chile.
Right.
Chile.
Right. Chile, whatever it is. You know, and I'm glad that there are grammar police, because it seems to me as though NPR is considered to be the place for broadcasting and intelligent broadcasting and language, if at all possible. People make mistakes every now and then, but it needs to be used properly.
Yes.
It just does.
I absolutely agree, and I know that, you know, I was raised with a grammarian mother who corrected every time we made a mistake, but I'm always impressed when people speak well, and I know when they are, so.
Right. Thank you, Michael, so much for your call. We have a couple lines open if you want to join our conversation with Alicia Shepard, who's the NPR ombudsman. 800-486-8655 is the number. David from Stevens Point, hi.
Hi, thanks. I guess mine is another comment that goes in the category of, you know, the overall problems in the public discourse. You know, I was listening before about the Mr. Obama issue and the question of respect for the president. And, you know, the context for that is that, you know, we have questions raised and skepticism about the president's legitimacy, about his citizenship. And as I say, it's not the whole problem to be laid at NPR's feet, but I think there are serious problems in the public square these days.
You have problems, what, that you don't think he's a citizen, or that's being discussed?
I think there's an overall cynicism, you know, fundamental skepticism about government's ability to do anything. I think too much political coverage is just purely who's up, who's down. And I just think that we have a pretty dysfunctional public debate these days, you know, in a way that is more serious, more dysfunctional than usual.
Alicia.
Well, I would agree with Dave. I think it's sad, but I'm not sure that the news media is contributing to that as much as, you know, just what's happening on Capitol Hill and how intensely partisan the debate is right now. And it is really unfortunate, and it just seems like maybe NPR does cover too much politics. As I was listening to him, I thought that might be something for me to look into. Because when you're seated right here in Washington, D.C., you're going to be influenced by, you know, coverage of politics, since that is the main business here.
I don't think it's, well, I'm just giving you my opinion on this. Mm-hmm. I welcome that kind of coverage because you are balanced about it, and it's important to know what's going on. I welcome, and you get a different kind of interview on NPR. You get, if you're interviewing people who are in power, there's, because of the skill of your staff, you get something different, and I like that.
Yeah, but there are other topics. I mean, the topic of aging, how well is that covered? How well is the environment covered? I mean,
yes.
So there are other issues, transportation issues. In fact, I think that NPR is about to start a beat or bring it in back to Washington, D.C. On transportation.
Mm-hmm. Global warming, energy, yeah, all of that is important. So you think there might be? Just do you get a lot of complaints about too much political coverage? We get some of that, certainly.
No, actually, I don't. But I just think that, you know, the volume of complaints to me doesn't always say, okay, that's something for me to look into. Sometimes it's the quality of the complaint. I mean, I can get one complaint and think, wow, that person really has a valid point. You know, and when I get a complaint, I think your listeners might be interested in how it works. What I do is I talk to the listener or take the email, maybe call them back, get more information. Then I run it by the people here at NPR. I mean, I actually act like a reporter and ask them questions. What was their thinking behind this? Why did they run that particular story? Why did they use that person? And then I write this column, which is, again, it's npr.org/ombudsman. And if I could encourage your listeners, you can go to that website and put your email in a bucket on the right, and then anything I write about NPR, which is, you know, 1 to 2 at the most a week, would come right to your email box.
Great. Oh, this modern world, Alicia, isn't it something?
Well, there's 100 different ways now to, you know, connect with people. And, you know, that brings me to another thought, which is so important, which is the need for strong ethics. Right now, Kathleen, I think you'd agree there's a cesspool of information out there on the Internet. And that makes public radio really valuable because it has a brand, it has a reputation of being solid, factually checked out information that's put in context and is balanced and presents all sides. And, I mean, not always, but that is the goal. And I think that that's really important. And one of the reasons is, NPR has a strong ethics code, which is on my website. And then they also, just last summer, came out with a social media code of really how to behave on the Internet and how to, you know, always be thinking about NPR's reputation.
Thanks, David, for your call. We go next to Jean from Eau Claire. Hi, Jean.
Hello. I slightly disagree with your guest regarding the politics. I think it should be covered even more. Politics affect every day of our life, and the only place that I will turn in to listen to political information is NPR, because locally, all I hear is the Rush Limbaughs, Sean Hannity's totally biased presentation, and this is the only place that I can tune in and get honest information of what's going on politically in my country. And I hope you will reconsider, because I personally think we need more. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Jean.
All right. Jean, I'm not saying one way or the other. I just wondered if that was the case in terms of whether or not there was too much political coverage. But, you know, what I like about what you just said is that you do listen, or you can listen to Rush Limbaugh, because I feel that people make a mistake only listening to NPR. And it's not that you won't get a lot from NPR, but I think that we need to hear what other people are saying that we don't associate with or we wouldn't normally listen to, you know, whether it's on the left or the extreme left. You know, listen to Democracy Now!, listen to Rush Limbaugh. I just think that it's our civic duty to sort of find out what's going on outside of our own worlds.
Mm-hmm. It is. Everybody was talking about this. I was thinking about the days when there was a fairness doctrine, which seems so long ago now, doesn't it?
Because yes, and I think it probably was, probably 20 years ago.
It was a long time ago. I remember working in radio during those days, and in Hamai, how things have changed. I'm not sure for the better.
Yeah, I can only imagine if there were a fairness doctrine that they'd have to have like five full-time staff or an army of full-time staff at the FCC to enforce
right.
it.
Exactly. Let's go to Randy from Elk Mound. Hello, Randy.
How are you this evening?
Fine. How are you?
Yeah, actually, good today.
Well, good.
I'm a little concerned about the references to our political figures as far as Mr. Obama or President Obama.
Uh-huh.
We elected a man to public office, and it almost seems like NPR wants to put these political people on above the rest of the public. And I'm a little concerned about that. And the other thing that...
Wait, can you elaborate on that? I'm not quite... by calling him Mr. Obama?
No. I guess what I'm saying is that, the difference between President Obama, Mr. Obama, he is the president, but at some point in our society, it's like Governor Doyle, it's at some point in our society,
mm-hmm.
why are these people put above and need special reverence to their names and positions? These people they're just people. We hired them to do a job.
Well, you're saying we should call him Barack?
Next point.
Okay.
The point I have is, and this is directed at both of you today, is your extreme disappointment that only 10% of the people donate to your station out of their private funds. I donate every day in my taxes. So I'm very disappointed that you think that the rest of society, especially those in Wisconsin, don't donate to support not only yourselves directly through your wages, right, but also the whole of NPR. And I'll take my comment off air. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, well, this he's partially correct, but the way it works is that it's right that taxes fund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Only about 1% of NPR's budget comes from that and their grants that they have to apply for. Public radio stations, I think maybe 10% of their budget would come from government money, but the bulk of it, 50% or so, comes from listeners. Is that how you understand it, Kathleen?
Yeah, that's my thought about it. It might be a little bit less than that in terms of underwriting to in state capacity. So we're supposed to get about third, I've heard, of our funding from corporate underwriting as well.
Okay. Well, the point is that it's like someone brought up earlier, the BBC, you have to pay a license fee. Every individual does, and that supports the BBC. So, yes, your tax dollars are going to fund or paying a small percentage of public radio's costs, but certainly not covering them completely by any stretch.
No.
Donations from listeners as well as corporate underwriting. Cover the bulk of the cost.
Right. Well, we just wouldn't exist if it weren't for public dollars from listeners.
Right.
Not just listener dollars. We would be written off the map.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much for the call. 800-486-8655 is our number. And our guest is Alicia Shepherd. She is NPR's ombudsman. And we'll be with more of your calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I believe Tom is our next caller. Tom?
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree with the guest that it's important to get a myriad of different views on the news. And that's why I listen to NPR, Wisconsin Public Radio, and I love Fox News. I know they have all sides. They got Juan Williams. I think he has something affiliation with National Public Radio. But what I was mainly wanting to call is I also watch CNN. But I also wanted to just comment that I do feel that National Public Radio is liberal bias. And when you get like these callers that call in and say that the Rush Limbaugh, that's all they have. It's just not true. You got print media, New York Times, way extreme to the left, and you got public radio, and you got things like CNBC, and all these other outlets. But there's only one side that's basically saying that they want the fairness doctrine, and I don't want the fairness doctrine at all. I think all views should be out there and should be said. And it's a it's an individual's right to listen to and to read and to tune in to what you want to. And I think that's a big reason why, like, Air America failed. They just didn't get the listenership. But it's an individual's right to listen to what they want to. And, again, there's only one side, and that would be the liberal side that is trying to push the fairness doctrine.
I don't know that there's a push to bring back the fairness doctrine. What, do you know something I don't know?
Well, I hear it all the time. I never hear it. When's the last time you heard a conservative say that they think that they should limit, limit CNN or public radio? It's not out there, but you hear these guys talking about how they want to, push the fairness doctrine. I've heard Nancy Pelosi talk about it. One last point I want to make is, in the culture of corruption, you don't get the same balance. When that congressman from Republican from Texas, the name escapes me right now, but when he had his problems, it was just every day you heard shows about it. And now Charlie Rangel, you don't hear, I haven't heard any shows on him.
Oh, I've heard a lot about Charlie Rangel, I think.
I think, again, that you're sort of echoing my point that you may just sort of gloss over if you hear these things about Charlie Rangel because of, your own political persuasions. But I think that NPR has covered Charlie Rangel quite a bit. And again, it's easy now with the internet to check on these things. You go to NPR.org and you Google his name and you see how many stories have come up.
Well, what's causing that? The fact that Tim doesn't believe that story is being covered by places like NPR or the New York Times, for that matter. Why is it that we criticize those that don't have our political philosophy?
I really think it's human nature, and again, how we listen. And I really noticed it during the political campaign that if somebody supported John McCain and they heard a piece that was in any way favorable to Barack Obama, they would tell me that piece was biased because it wasn't mentioning A, B, and C. And in many ways, it's the same thing with the Middle East. If you tend to support what's happening in Gaza or the Palestinians, then when you hear a story that's positive about Israel, then I'm told that NPR is biased in that way. And I just think that as a society, we don't seem to be open to other viewpoints that don't agree with what we are actually believing. And so when we hear something that contradicts something that we don't believe, instead of being open to thinking, maybe they have a point on that one, but I still think blah, it's, they're wrong. And that may be too simplistic, Kathleen, but I do feel that we are not as tolerant of ideas that don't match our political persuasion.
Right. Well, it's hard. Being tolerant is hard, I think.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes, and that's why I've encouraged NPR to cover the Tea Party, to listen to what people say, that you don't just dismiss them because they, have one or two people who may be eccentric and do things that, might draw attention to them in a negative way, but, to listen to some of the concerns and the things they had to say. NPR ran a cartoon, it was over 4 months ago, and it was making fun of the Tea Party. And it's languished on the website for a couple of months, and then a conservative found it and, went to town about public money being used in this vein. And I started hearing from conservatives all over the country about this, and I tended to agree with them. I felt that it was an offensive cartoon. It didn't add to the debate, and it was sort of dismissing them in the same way, that the cartoonist was complaining that they were doing to the other side. So I came down on saying that I felt that NPR needed to treat the people who are members of the Tea Party with respect and listen to what they had to say.
Tim, thanks for your call. Willie from Madison. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, Willie. Go ahead.
Oh, good, good. Okay, I think Tim had the thing that I hear rather typically. I haven't been hearing anything like that. Well, they say that about various things, and usually I think the reason is because Rush or Sean or Glenn Beck has been saying, you're not hearing anything about this. You're not hearing anything about this. A second point is the whole thing about what are they talking about, the liberal left-wing New York Times? Would we have had a war in Iraq without Judith Miller? Would we have had a war earlier in Iraq without without all of their talking to Ahmad Shalabi and other stuff? The idea that the New York Times is a left-wing paper. What I would want to say, you used the example of Amy Goodman's organization. I think when we talk about Amy Goodman's organization on the left versus Fox on the right, we need to remember when it comes to truth, when it comes to libel or slander laws, Amy Goodman's organization could be wiped out rather easily by a concerted lawsuit campaign if they had something in there where you definitely could prove libel or slander. Now, if you were to sue Rupert Murdoch's Fox News in a similar situation, and boy, I think there are plenty of them. I have an obvious political bias. How long? They could keep you bottled up in court for 20 years with all of their lawyers. So, you know, there's no check on the lies of Fox News. There's a substantial check, I think, on any lies from any of these lefty organizations. How hard would it be to wipe out the nation?
Alicia.
I'm not sure that I agree with the listener on that. I mean, I just don't imagine that, you know, just to being able to sue Democracy Now! Puts a check on them. And, you know, I don't think that people think, oh, I can't sue Fox because I'll get caught up in an endless lawsuit, but I can sue Democracy Now! You know, the checks and balances should come from the listeners who also check out facts. So good journalism is accountable, and you can go to the sources that the journalists quote and check that out. And, you know, in fairness to Fox News, there is a difference between what happens before 6 o'clock or after 6 o'clock in the sense that Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck are not exclusively Fox News. They are opinion shows that are on Fox News, but there are also straight-up reporting that gets done every day that is on Fox News as well.
Thank you, Willie, for your call. Barbara from Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Earlier you talked about too much or too little political coverage, and I don't think that's the question. I think the question is judgment. For example, I find it particularly offensive when coverage is given to Dick Cheney, and actually his daughter as well, but particularly Cheney, because certainly we've had 8 years of a discredited administration where he pulled the strings. I mean, he was the puppeteer and Bush the mere puppet. That's been well documented. So to give him airtime now as he babbles against Obama incessantly, that's what I think is really almost irresponsible. Now, I also want to make a plug for independent media, and I guess I put NPR in that category, but the caller earlier was talking about his taxes, blah, blah, blah. One of the things that we need to support in this country is independent media, since certainly the other media is corporate-owned, and we can't say that that is independent, unbiased media. So I think it's very, very important to have all of these media outlets that are independent, whether it's radio or television or print, that they're supported by listeners, because there's a far greater chance of having a balanced perspective reported than certainly with corporate media.
Well, it's hard to disagree with that. I totally think that an independent media is what our democracy depends on. But I'd also point out that NPR gets about a third of its funding from corporate underwriting. So I'm not sure. In fact, I firmly believe that being corporate owned does not mean that you can't be independent. I think that a lot of news organizations, the New York Times, CBS, they are not beholden to corporations. I mean, I realize to say that there's a firewall between the underwriters or the corporate sponsors or advertisers, and to have listeners believe that they really don't have an impact is a leap of faith. And I think that's why you have to just determine, is this news organization credible and do I believe it? And that is really, at the end of the day, what matters.
It is, when you just listed those, a rather unusual source of funding, isn't it, to have underwriting, listeners, and the government supporting you. It's fairly complicated.
It is, but I can promise you that any reporter here is not paying attention to where the, they will pay attention to make sure they get a paycheck and they do their job, but they're not thinking, oh, good, Archer Daniel Midland is supporting us, so I better do a story for them.
Exactly.
I mean, that just, it's easy to see why someone would think that, but, you and I have been in this business a long time, and I've just never seen an example of it. And when it does happen, it gets outed pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah, it just doesn't happen. I can't remember it happening. Joe from Franklin. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Joe.
I think NPR is great. I listen to it all the time. It fills a void that it has a balance. You do have Republicans on. You do have Democrats on. You've got the Week in Review every Friday. Not only that, you've got a nice blend of other types of shows that really don't have to do with politics. You have Garden Talk.
Mm-hmm.
When he has the bug guy on. I mean, this radio almost reminds me of the way radio was 25, 30 years ago. I mean, I remember when you were on TMJ.
A long time ago, yes.
And I called you a couple times on there. And you had Gordon Hinckley, and you had, Ask Your Neighbor. It's nice radio. It's not just political screaming all the time. And when you do have politics on, it's not screaming. It's not a host just ranting away for 4 hours. You have guests who have points to make. I just think NPR and public radio is wonderful. If we didn't have it, our lives would be diminished because all we would have would be right wing on one station 24 hours a day. And maybe once in a while you can pull in Ed Schultz out of Racine. But no, NPR, it's just the best radio out there. It really is.
All right. I'm glad you called. There you go, Alicia.
Well, the only thing I wanted to point out is that there is a difference between NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio,
right. And
that Wisconsin Public Radio is independently programmed. They buy programming from NPR. Every show that's on, for instance, Kathleen Dunn's show is not sponsored by NPR. NPR has no input in what guests you have. NPR doesn't have any input on what Terry Gross does for Fresh Air. Their NPR has four shows that they are editorially responsible for, that they take total responsibility, and that would be All Things Considered, Morning Edition, Talk of the Nation, and Tell Me More. And beyond that, any other shows are distributed by NPR. But Wisconsin Public Radio is the one he should be patting on the back because of the shows that you have chosen to put on.
Well, and we've chosen to put on NPR shows
sure.
in some areas, too, and they're very important. The other thing that he brought up, though, and this happens as well, and I'm wondering what the process is of that human touch that NPR has, and I think that we do as well. There's something you don't find anywhere else. And these are those stories that keep you listening. It's somebody you find in Kentucky or some unusual story that NPR has a great knack for developing and getting you glued to the radio to hear the end of it. And we get those stories a lot from listeners, people who have this special line of work or this special thought or these really human stories. I think we do that well.
Yes, that I would say that is the hallmark of NPR, and also to have a little fun. I will never forget when Robert Siegel, the host of All Things Considered, tried to get a farmer to put lipstick on a pig.
Right. We need to laugh a little bit, don't we? There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that All Things Considered in particular is good at having a little fun.
Exactly.
In addition to being very serious and thoughtful.
Yeah. It makes you want to go try that this afternoon, doesn't it, to put lipstick on a pig.
Might be hard to find one running around Washington, D.C., but...
Well, probably. Thanks, Joe, for the call. John from Nina is next. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. I don't know if this is relevant to your fabulous discussion, but while I've been listening during this past hour, a recorded telephone call came in, and I took it, and it from a group called Americans for Prosperity. And they're having a gathering in Wisconsin Dells later this month, and looking for people to come to it. Is this an organization that, do you know about, and could you elaborate a little if you do?
No, I have never heard of that. You know, I do know that there's now like a coffee party movement, which are, you know, the left or the liberals are trying to put together, but I've not heard of that. Have you, Kathleen?
No, I have not. I'm sorry.
So just Google it.
Yeah, Google. That's, hey, this is the modern age. Alicia, you were terrific. Thank you so much for
all
being
right
with us.
Well, I invite anyone to contact me, npr.org/ombudsman. Sign up to
great
receive the posting call. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Alicia Shepard, Ombudsman for National Public Radio, our guest. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. John Treader for On Air Production. We'll be with you tomorrow here on the Ideas Network.